Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
703 Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. It is Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Herron with you tonight, 7 until 10 this evening. Lots to get to today. An exciting night of baseball last night. An exciting sports day all around to recap. But some baseball excitement last night that we have to touch on. A big series in terms of the National League Central getting going tomorrow afternoon at Wrigley Field that we'll discuss along the way. But finally, the Bears' first-round pick, the next name to go in the list of all-time great legendary Bears linebackers. It all has to start by signing a contract, and finally, that appears to be just about done with Roquan Smith.
It's official. Well, it's official-ish. It's on the way. It's going down official lane. He's not quite there yet, but until the ink is on it, then I suppose there's still some reason to be at least mildly worried, you know, just to let the teeth chatter a bit, but it's nice that this part is behind us, and I was saying it from jump, Shep, that about the second preseason game for the Bears, because they had five total. I, you know, said it on several outlets, certainly said it on this station when the holdout was first on its way. After that second preseason game, he needs to get to camp at that point, whether it was because he acquiesced, the Bears acquiesced, but as far as the deal being done in a time period that shouldn't affect the season opener, that was when I was going to start to get worried if they didn't get something done for this week. So we'll see whether or not he ends up playing this Saturday against Denver. I'm not as concerned about that. I think more likely than not
he plays this weekend. Is
there? You know what? Because today is what? Today is Monday, right?
Yeah, it comes after Sunday traditionally.
So if he's on the field, on the practice field tomorrow and Wednesday, you know, if he's actually hitting people by Wednesday or Thursday, because there's going to be a couple of days where he's not in pads. But once they really get cranked up, if he's hitting somebody like on Wednesday or Thursday against Denver, if he looks good doing it, then I'm sure the itch will be there to get him a series in the game Saturday. If they don't, then they don't, and that's fine because, you know, who needs to knock the rust off this week? He can knock the rust off next week, and he'll be fine for the regular season.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. Welcome in Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. We're discussing the news of the evening. Roquan Smith signs his deal, or at least is very close to signing. It appears the 29-day holdout is nearing completion. He's expected to be practicing with the Bears before too long here. And this hour being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS-4-KIDS. And I'm curious to know, we've heard so much about from the second he was drafted, the expectation is when you play linebacker in this town, specifically an interior linebacker position, your expectation is to be what we were just talking about a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Brian Urlacher going into the Hall of Fame. Before him, it was Singletary, an all-time great. Dick Butkus, George, all of them. Like, there are tons of Bears, legendary linebackers. I'm not worried about him being a legend right now. Not worried about that part of it. We've heard so much about him, though, and his football instincts being great and his football IQ being awesome. He's going to be green dot helmet guy. And we became familiar with, oh, yeah, that's the guy calls the signals, green dot guy. Where is he at in terms of that? If he hasn't been practicing, if he hasn't been around the team in that sense, I have no doubt that he's texting with teammates, probably talking on the phone with teammates. Hell, maybe spending time away from the field with teammates, but you're not allowed to be in contact with your bosses during all of that. And you're not coordinating anything with your defensive coordinator or your head coach or anything with that. Where IQ-wise, where playbook-wise can he be expected to be in terms of that? Is he going to be – is this enough time to get him ready to be the signal caller defensively for week one against Green Bay on Sunday night?
It is. And like, even specifically, when I've been in Bourbonnais during training camp, and Danny Trevathan has talked to us, to the media, about just the fact that he has stayed in very close contact with Roquan Smith, keeping him abreast of any adjustments that have been going on in the defense, just to make sure that once he shows up, he's going to be ready to pick up where he left off from what apparently was a fairly impressive effort he had during mini camps and OTAs. So he's at least been in the defense. He's spent a number of practices, a lot of time on the field and in the meeting rooms learning the scheme. And even when I saw him the morning after the draft, and we ran the interview I did with him because we just happened to be on the same flight coming back from Dallas when I was there, and I asked Roquan specifically about what his confidence was in trying to pick up the Vic Fangio defensive scheme, and he was very confident that he understood what the defense was at that point. That was even before he had stepped onto the field and what his role in it would be. So this is the point, both mentally and physically right now, just missing 2 of 5 preseason games. There's 3 preseason weeks of activity remaining before they're actually getting set to prepare for Green Bay and play the Packers in that opener. So I think for him being Green Dot guy by the opener, I think there's still a great chance of that. And we certainly have to remember, if Danny Trevathan is healthy, he's more than capable of being Green Dot guy. If Trevathan's not healthy, then Nick Kwiatkowski can be Green Dot guy if they need to for a couple of weeks, because the roles of the 2 inside linebackers in this defense, based off the matchup and the personnel, can be somewhat interchangeable, you know, schematically. So I think the Green Dot thing, it'll be nice when Roquan is ready for it. But for him to be ready to be physically capable of being a playmaker, to me, is the more important part of it, because there are guys who are ready to have that Green Dot if he's not.
What's the Bears defense, the way Vic Fangio runs it? How does it compare to how operations go with it down at Georgia? Like, how much of a transition in terms of scheme is it?
There's a lot of similarities. And one of the things that they had the ability to do at Georgia, it was more of the differences lie off the edge with the outside linebackers. For the inside backers and what Roquan Smith did at Georgia, it'll look different than what we've seen Bears linebackers maybe doing a lot of here in recent years, because my impression is that Vic Fangio will allow him to play downhill more frequently, as opposed to more of a scraping sideline to sideline kind of attitude like we saw from Danny Trevathan last year and Kwiatkowski when he's been on the field. I think because of the athleticism, the instincts, the playmaking ability, and the reason they drafted Roquan Smith in the top 10, especially at that position, was because he can be a playmaker. He's a guy who's got a sense for the snap count, a guy who's got a sense for how to slip blocks, because he's not going to be, you know, one of these old school hulking inside linebackers that takes on blocks snap after snap. As a linebacker, he's a guy that can penetrate, that can be on the opposing side of the line of scrimmage. So we're going to see, again, this is my anticipation, not giving away anything I saw in Bourbonnais, but my anticipation is that we're going to see them utilizing Roquan Smith, not snap after snap. He's not going to be blitzing every down, but we're going to see him being utilized in a way where he can impose the will of the defense from the inside, from the second level, into the opposing backfield more frequently because of his athleticism and instincts. He's just got a great knack for doing, like we were talking about the peanut punch the other night. It's not necessarily something you can coach to do it as well as Peanut. His ability, Roquan's ability to penetrate, to anticipate, it's not something you can necessarily teach every linebacker to do. He's just got a very instinctive ability to do that. Plus, he's one of the great athletes we've seen as an inside linebacker to come out of the draft in a number of years.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. The news of the night, Roquan Smith signs his deal, or at least is very near signing his deal, to officially become a Chicago Bear. Yeah, that's all worked out. I guess there's a ton of paperwork to do, some T's to cross, some I's to dot, and whatever else that there is with that, but he's expected to be officially signed with the Bears before too long here. We're going to take a timeout. Our teammate, David Hoff, from the Mully and Haw Show each morning, he's been on top of a lot of this news with the contract talks and the contract negotiations. He'll join us, break down some of the news of the night with Roquan Smith officially signing with the Bears, or at least coming very close to doing so. David Haw joins us next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And finally, he's able to do that. That's the voice of Roquan Smith on draft day, shortly after being selected by Ryan Pace and the Chicago Bears. Welcome back in. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. And our pleasure to go out to the hotline this evening. Kind enough, after working all morning this morning right here on these very airwaves, you hear himself and Mike Mulligan each and every morning, 5 to 9 here on The Score. It's our very own David Haw. David, appreciate the time tonight. What's going on?
Hey, guys. A lot going on today with Bears world, as you guys have pointed out. A good discussion about Roquan Smith, and you're right, it's not official yet, but certainly it looks that way. And I think that everybody wants to know, you know, who won. And I think that's a fair question. It's an obvious question as the information, you know, is still being gathered. I think the big picture is, point of this is that everybody wins. You know, everybody wins because it appears that you're getting a guy into camp that it's early enough still where he can make an impact. And we were getting perilously close to the point in preseason where, had he not come to an agreement, had both sides probably not recognized the need to compromise, then you were probably putting his rookie impact and his rookie season in jeopardy. So this is a good day for the Bears. As they work out the final details, this is a good step in the right direction, and he's going to be a very good player.
So the depth at that position, inside linebacker, within this scheme, you know, we got to, on draft night, since that point, start to evaluate what he could end up meaning to this team and how he could be utilized. So as the frustration is maybe built with Matt Nagy and some of the other coaches a bit waiting for Roquan to get in, now that it's over, what level of excitement do you anticipate seeing and hearing from them tomorrow?
You know, I think you want to temper it a little bit, Anthony. I think that you, all those things remain true. But I think that the anxiety that you felt, the animosity that might have begun to build, the emotion that people started to invest in this standoff, and it was a standoff, it's all moot now. It really has no bearing on what, is going to happen next. And I think that that's why the timing of this is important. He still has an opportunity to be everything that you wanted him to be as a rookie. And so I think that, you know, it's difficult how to react. You can react however you want to as a Bears fan, and you have every right to do that. I would recommend, you know, hitting reset and, you know, and proceeding cautiously. And I think that goes for the Bears too. Don't be in such a hurry to prove that this was the right pick. And he should not be in such a hurry to prove that he belongs. You know, there's a body issue. He's got to make sure he's in shape. He's got to make sure that, you know, he's adjusting to the speed of the game. I don't need to tell you, Anthony, that takes a little time. And if he rushes everything, and if they try to rush the process, that's when things will happen that you'll regret. And I think you're in a position now where, you know, the regrettable aspect is behind you. Don't create another regrettable episode by rushing to prove something that you don't really need to prove.
No, that sources have agendas, and that's part of the reason some of the news gets pushed the way that it does at times. But based off of what we had heard, they're so far apart. Were you surprised to get that news today?
I was a little surprised, Shep. Yeah, I mean, I think that what happened was, you know, the way I understand it was there was, the initial, quick recap, the initial standoff or disagreement over the helmet issue. Bears came off that. They conceded. CAA came back and wanted further protections with the language, and that was reported. And I think the public debate over that, because I felt like they were asking for things that were the exception more than the rule, and I think the public debate over that and how that maybe characterized CAA and characterized the player, my interpretation was it kind of bothered CAA, and I think that there was it probably hurt communication, and it did come to a little bit more of a became a little pet more perhaps, and so that wasn't productive in the process. And so I think that after that, I felt like, you know, they had to probably, you know, let that cool, let that simmer a little bit, and then once they began to see what was ahead of them, that's why, you know, things accelerated to the point they did today. So I guess the level of surprise was more than mild, but I figured that if they were going to get anything done, it had to be this week.
How realistic is it? The playing in the game Saturday is probably far-fetched, but how realistic is it he could be padded up a couple of days from now and get any serious work in against Denver?
I wouldn't do it. I would avoid it. I would resist it. I don't believe you need to risk it. I think it's probably an enhanced risk if you put a guy in pads, you know, and you play him at a game speed, even though it's exhibition season, you know, 5 days after he signed a contract. I think you're asking for trouble there. I would slow play it. I would target probably the home game, on the Saturday, I think it's the 25th. and let him make his Bears debut that day, get a feel for what he's up against. This is a pretty high-level athlete. I think he's an instinctive guy. As you pointed out, Anthony, I think that some of the things that he'll be doing will be more downhill than maybe scraping and reading. And I just think the less he has to think about, the better. So give him some time to work into that. I also think that we're going to have a lot of conversations over him being the quote-unquote green dot guy, which is sort of a new thing in the NFL. I wouldn't give him any more to consider than he has to. So, you know, if those were the original plans, let that take care of itself, kind of gradually get into that. I just think the Bears have got to be smart here in, you know, remembering that this is a long season and it's only August 13th. And so, you know, you want to make every decision as you get him ready to get on the field that keeps that long season in mind.
What do you know about the communication that Smith has had with teammates? We know it's against the rules to talk with coaches and front office members when you're not signed under a deal. But in terms of communicating with teammates and whatever kind of workout you can do away from the facility, has any of that gone on or been led to believe that at least?
Just been led to believe the typical sort of text messaging and, you know, kind of communication that way. I don't know as a rookie if you have a lot of long standing relationships that, you know, guys who you're used to contacting or communicating with in times of crises. You know, I think that his agency probably kept a pretty tight lid on all his communication as much as they could. I would hope that he's in as good of a shape as he possibly can be without having actually, you know, worked out in Bourbon A and gone through the training camp rigors, which will hurt him. And will, again, another reason why I don't think he need to be in a rush. As far as the playbook, he's an intelligent player. I think he comes to the Bears one of the reasons, not only because of athleticism, but because of his intelligence. He was deemed plug and play. So I don't think the playbook stuff is going to be as big of an issue. He'll be able to compensate a lot of that with his just pure ability. So I don't know, Shep. I know that, you know, it's probably been very spotty in terms of the communication with the Bears.
One of my, I guess, my fellow Iowa brethren, James Daniels, he finally hit the field the other night. And after where, you know, initially we were told and they were fairly adamant about it, even on draft night, he's going to be a guard and we're not going to move him to center. And then because of some depth issues there at center, Hronis Grasu, he's still been out. And so they moved James Daniels over to center, and he looks good. Has a nice preseason game the other night. They've still been, and correct me if I'm wrong, fairly insistent that Cody Whitehair is going to be the center, and I anticipate that making sense. But it did look to me like Cush struggled a bit at guard. Have there been any inklings, any indications that Daniels could get any work with the first group yet coming up here?
We watched the same game. I mean, I had the same impression, and I have had somewhat of a surprise reaction to the fact that they have seemed, you know, kind of inflexible on that one. I don't think they're willing to entertain that possibility yet. You know, you're not going to start many controversies by debating, you know, who plays center and left guard in many NFL cities. But I think that you have the makings of a pretty good discussion because you on one hand, you have the experience in Harry Hiestand and the position coach who you respect and is highly regarded. But you have an inexperienced head coach who doesn't have a lot of, you know, experience because of his first year as a head coach in making personnel decisions. And you have an offensive line that really needs to put the best players, the five best guys, as we always hear, on the field at the same time. James Daniels looks like he potentially could be one of those best five guys.
Yeah.
So you want to find a spot for him. I don't know if the left guard is the best spot. Maybe Cody Whitehair can play there. We know he can. I'll be curious to see how this unfolds. I was a little surprised at how insistent they were.
David, appreciate the time as always. On the way out here, what are you looking forward to mostly for game three of the preseason in Denver on Saturday?
Well, as I sort of wrote in the Tribune on Sunday, Shep, I'd like to see more of Mitch Trubisky, and I'd like to see more of Mitch Trubisky succeed. I think there's so much invested in him in terms of hope, in terms of resources, in terms of careers. I would like to see that process start. And I think that somebody, you know, after I wrote that, comes back and I got an email and like, well, he did play 12 games last year. But this is a new it's like he hit reset as well. This is a new offense. This is a new season. It's got to be a new quarterback. He's got to be more dangerous. He's got to be the reason you win rather than the reason you don't lose. That's a difference there. And so I guess this is the beginning of seeing more of the quarterback who has an opportunity here to be the franchise player that they envision him being. And that's exciting. It can be demoralizing if he's bad. I don't expect him to be bad. But if he's going to be good, I want to start seeing that Saturday night in Denver.
David, appreciate you taking the time this evening. Let you back to everything at home, and we'll be listening tomorrow morning.
Early morning.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, David.
Take care. Yep.
David Haugh, right here on 670 The Score, is where you can hear him each and every morning with Mike Mulligan on the Mully and Haugh Show, 5 to 9 a.m.
A little double duty out of him after early morning yesterday. He's obviously going to be back on the air tomorrow. Glad he was able to join us here to give us the latest on Roquan and the Bears.
Yeah, he was on top of the news with the Adam Schefter report today. David was very quickly to confirm that. He had heard more in terms of the deal, so wanted to give him a chance to get on and share some of that information with you. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. It is Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Heron with you, as reportedly Roquan Smith close to signing his deal. Finally, 29 days. Seemed like forever. I mean, I don't know how many days of that. He was the only player, only draft pick of all seven rounds that hadn't signed.
The last remaining one. And, you know, he did. I guess one benefit is that he didn't have to go to Bourbonnais. You know, there's worse places you could go than Bourbonnais, but there's certainly better places you could be. He probably had a better time in Athens than he would have being in Bourbonnais. I mean, I've been there. You've been there. It's not the most happening spot on the globe.
I once lacerated my spleen in Bourbonnais at Olivet Nazarene. So my memories of Bourbonnais are not ideal. So I can understand if somebody wants a free pass out of there, I can see why.
I'm guessing, well, unless he turns into Aaron Donald, then I would assume he'll have to go to Bourbonnais over the next few years.
Yeah,
I
mean, right.
Aaron Donald
turns into the best
Rams.
Player defensively in the league overnight. Yeah, Aaron
That'd be a good reason, I guess.
I suppose.
If suddenly
he
is immediately the best inside linebacker in football, he says, you know what, I'm not showing up to camp next year because I'm so vastly underpaid.
Yeah,
if he's got a legit case for it, I'd be okay with that.
I guess. I mean, I'm not usually on board with things like that, but if that's what I have to trade in order to get the best interior linebacker in the football to be on the Bears, then I would be okay with that. Talk about first world football problems.
Yeah.
That's something that the Bears have not had to deal with for the better part of my life, outside of a couple of years there in 2005, 2006. It's been few and far between that they've been one of the model franchises of the league. So, yeah, I guess I would be on board with that. But what is the expectation? I thought it was interesting that David there kind of mentioned, slow down the expectations. Mm-hmm. Don't throw everything at him. Don't be in a rush to put the sticker on his hat his helmet and make him the green sticker guy. Don't try to overwhelm him. Yes, part of him is going to already be behind simply because you can probably speak.
He's been there.
Yeah.
He's been home.
You can speak to it better than anyone. There's being in shape. There's being in running shape. There's being in, I used to always call it, there's being in track and field shape, where you're in shape to run. And then there's a different being in shape to play a physical sport, too, where you're getting the crap kicked out of you or kicking the crap out of somebody. And let's face it, I mean, I know practices aren't what they were in the two-a-days days and the doubles
Way back
days.
In my day when we were doing two-a-days.
Not me. I'm just saying in terms of the
NFL. I just mean me personally. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm a real old dude, but I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
But I know that it's a different, essentially how you practice and whatnot is different than it was. But what's the difference now from what you've been around at the college level, from practices you've covered at the pros? Like, what is the difference in terms of, all right, being in shape physically to go out and run all day and do that versus being in shape to, I mean, go at it for a 15-second play, get a 30-second breather, and go at it again?
You keep hearing the prominent term that we tend to use in football parlance is callous. And when you're on the field and when you're banging, there's a different type. You know, it's one thing for you to be able to work out and to condition your muscles in the weight room and condition your heart from a cardiovascular standpoint, from running and jumping and doing explosive training, all those other things that you're able to do without actually running into other humans at high speeds. But once you do start, and my old high school coach, Phil Acton, over at Bolingbrook High School, he used to describe it this way, where, you know, dancing is a contact sport, but football is a collision sport, where you have intense bodies running into each other repeatedly over and over and over again. And I think that's a great way that we used to call Coach Acton Silver Fox. That's a great way that Silver Fox used to describe the sport of football. And what that ends up doing is all your different joints and all your muscles and all the load that they have to take on when you are meeting force with force over and over again, that's really where the callus comes into play, because bigger hits are going to hurt no matter what. But once certain parts of your body get bruised up and everything, then yeah, there does feel like there's a callus, some scar tissue that's maybe there in the shoulders and in the hips and in the lower legs and in the neck, that eventually you do end up developing the ability to withstand the strain that you're putting on your body when you're going through some of those things. So that's probably the most kinesthetic or scientific sort of way that I could describe it, because it's just, you know, your brain doesn't necessarily get more accustomed to it, but there are orthopedically other parts of your body that do build that callus and become more accustomed to running into other people over and over again. And it allows you to be able to withstand that over longer periods of time.
That's Anthony Heron. I'm Nick Szczepkowski. 312-644-6767. Bears, they get their first round draft pick. Reportedly close to signing a deal is Roquan Smith. And finally, going to see him in some Bears blue and orange and see him practicing before too long here. Bears play again Saturday night in Denver, game three of their five-game preseason this year. What are you looking forward to? What are you curious to see on Saturday night, assuming that Roquan Smith is not going to be suited up for that? I think that's a safe assumption at this point. But what is it elsewhere that you're looking at for the Bears in the third preseason contest for them this year? 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. It's Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Heron in until 10 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. 739, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. It is Nick Szczepkowski and Anthony Heron with you tonight, spending the first hour talking some Bears this evening. Roquan Smith reportedly close to inking his deal finally and set to report to Bears practice facilities before too long. Doubtful that he'll play Saturday in Denver. Very highly unlikely, I would assume, but it'll be nice to finally have the prized first-round draft pick in a Bears uniform and practicing with the team. That's not all, though, on Saturday that I'm looking forward to. And I thought that when we had David Haw on about 20 minutes or so ago, that what he's looking for on Saturday speaks to much what I am as well. And I started our show when I hosted with you, Anthony Heron, on Friday night together.
Right.
We mentioned kind of recapping the Bears game the night before, what you liked, what you didn't like. And I thought that based off of the way the Bears were constructed this year, you have a second-year quarterback that played anything but this style of offense last year. 180-degree swing in terms of what he's going to be asked to do, how the offense is going to operate, go from mega conservative to very pass happy, very liberal offense is what you're going to see this time around from the Bears and the play calling and the play designs, in that you had so many different pieces that, one, they weren't around last year, hadn't played together, that my thought was, all right, I would have liked to see them use the Hall of Fame game for some reps. I would have liked to see more than just two possessions and four passes by Mitchell Trubisky in game, I guess, week one of the preseason is what it's officially called by the NFL. Even if it is week two, I would have liked to have seen that. And that's what I would like to see as well in this game, is I would like to see a heavy dose of this Bears quarterback, because let's face it, yeah, there's the risk of injury. I get that. That happens anytime you step on a practice field, let alone on a game field. But this offense has so far to go with so many new bodies that I would like to see some signs of, okay, this is what this offense is going to start to look like by the time week one comes around and the Bears are playing Sunday night up in Lambeau Field.
And, you know, to the issue that we were discussing with David just a moment ago about the interior offensive line, you know, James Daniels, and I'm not just saying this because he's a fellow Hawkeye, he played well. He's a second-round draft pick. There are high expectations. He's a fairly young guy. He's a young football player. So I suppose you could certainly take the approach of there's no need to rush him either. But with that being said, he looked good. If he continues to look good throughout the preseason and Eric Kush continues to struggle, because Kush is a talented player. He's played some good football in the NFL. So you don't want to overreact to whatever Kush got, you know, a couple of series essentially from the first game. But, you know, when pressure was there to be given, there was one time where Cody Whitehair got beat by one of the top interior pass rushers in football. Aside from that, most of the rush that took place, if there was pressure on Trubisky, it was Kush who was giving it up on the inside. So we'll see. He may play better this week. As you move forward, though, it's one thing to just have James Daniels available for depth purposes. It's another thing to be able to say we feel better about the way our line is shored up on the interior with the younger guy, with the more physically gifted player. And that may be where this situation develops into. What I think they don't want to run into, if I'm the Bears, is to continue moving Cody Whitehair around because of it. You know, I do think it makes more sense right now because center, when you get past left tackle, center is the most important position on the offensive line. And so to say that they're confident in Cody Whitehair and to leave him at that spot, I think that makes sense. That makes enough sense. So moving James Daniels to guard, seeing if Cush is working out at guard, moving other pieces around that, that makes a lot more sense to me because if you feel good about Cody Whitehair and understand why they would, then leave him at center. I'd be fine with that part of it. But right now, as far as what I'm seeing, you know, Cush is the player from that first game. And, you know, there's no surprise. He's, you know, the guy who had, I suppose, the least accolades coming into the situation. He's the one that concerns me up front as it sits right now. But they should be at least deep at that spot if everyone stays healthy. Overall, with the offense, once Allen Robinson is out there, once you get Taylor Gabriel involved, then hopefully that puts Mitchell Trubisky in a better position for success as well. You know, the eight plays he played, he was targeting Kevin White, who at this point doesn't look like he's going to be capable of playing quality football in the NFL. Hopefully he proves that statement for me wrong at some point. But up to this point in his career, he has not, and certainly in the first preseason game that he played in the other night, he did not either. So Trubisky, the intangibles, I think, are what have always, even looking back at the draft process, concerned me more with him than anything else because he is a physically gifted player. But now that we're past the Roquan Smith distraction and whether or not he's going to sign and when he's going to sign and the holdout, now all eyes turn to Trubisky and whether or not he can get the offense moving, how he handles that. He says the right things. I want to see tangibly him handling that and actually, you know, moving the ball and getting some more out of what his attitude about it seems to be, which is the proper approach. I like his attitude about the situation, but you're not seeing a level of productivity that actually goes with the things that we hear him talking about.
Or where are you on Whitehair then? If you want to keep him at center, where are you at in concerns of shotgun for him? That was an issue last year and hasn't looked necessarily great when he's been asked to do it so far this preseason.
Yeah, I mean, it was an issue last year, and the eight times he snapped the ball to Trubisky the other night, I didn't see a big issue with it. Like Jack Allen, the old Michigan State offensive lineman who they had in camp for a bit, and they cut him after the Hall of Fame game, he had immense troubles up in Bourbonnais snapping the ball. That was part of why the Bears released him. And he didn't look – I thought Jack Allen was going to end up having an opportunity to come in here and compete for a job. He didn't. He just didn't look very good. I think Whitehair is going to be fine. I'm really still fully engrossed with the thought that Cody Whitehair is going to end up being a quality center in the NFL. There certainly were some bad snaps last season. You know, he played really well for a rookie who had barely ever played center before his rookie year. Last year, what we saw as part of the regression to me with Cody Whitehair was more about a few bad snaps that we saw and then being moved around a bit between center and guard. But overall, especially as you look at the full breadth and depth of the whole season, as things move forward, after he got a few bad snaps out of the way in the first half of the year, second half of the season, he started looking like Cody Whitehair again to me. I mean, you know, a lot of those yards that Jordan Howard was rushing for, a lot of those were on the interior. They're not running toss sweeps to Howard. Cody Whitehair was blocking people on the inside, and that was without Kyle Long next to him. You know, when you have an even better player at the other guard position, then you're going to have the opportunity to open up even bigger holes. Overall, I thought Cody Whitehair played pretty well once a couple of the bad snaps got out of the way. So he's not as much of a concern to me as it sounds like he is to some other folks. And I know he didn't always grade out as well. And I take a little bit of issue with Pro Football Focus sometimes because it's a subjective thing. But for me, with my subjective eye, I thought overall Cody Whitehair still played pretty well at center last year.
Well, and that's the part that I always get worried about it because – and you kind of compare sports here. One of the things we take calls on all the time, the people that want to naysay Joe Maddon are, you need a set position. You need a set batting order. You need your same everyday lineup in order to make this thing work. And in baseball, I am totally not on board with that. Over the course of 162, you have to run things differently. Football-wise, though, it can't have been a benefit to Cody Whitehair to start off center first year. Go play some guard. Okay, go back to center. Okay, we don't know if we want you to be a guard or a center, so go practice there. Okay, come back here. And I get it. It's still an interior line position, But when you're bouncing a guy around and seemingly for a pattern there, it felt like almost like a week-to-week basis, like this is not good for development.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to see growth. You're not going to see hell. He's not going to stay the course of where he's at if you keep bouncing around from one spot to the other. And, okay, well, you're playing this way this week, and now you're going to have your hand on the ball instead of your hand on the ground this week when in your stance. And, like, that's that. Do I make too much out of that? Because no. I think that's one I hate being excuse guy, but I thought that was looking at where he had issues last year is like, well, yeah, you're asking him to do something entirely different every 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen? And
we
I know part of that's
it.
Because of injury, but
we,
still.
Right. And we talked about a lot with Cody Whitehair last year, with Kyle Long in the years before that, going out to right tackle and which guard is he going to play and how he was kind of vacillating around, you know, throughout the various positions of the offensive line. So, yeah, that made Kyle Long's life fairly tough at different points, and it wasn't easy on Cody Whitehair last year at all. So I do think I credit that for being part of the struggles that he had there too, where there's a level of inconsistency there, and especially when, again, he's not a guy who had just naturally played center for the entirety of his football life anyway. So he's still learning that position and the repetition that's required to really get good at that. And then they started moving him around. Now, you know, and like you just referenced, there were some other reasons that they ended up feeling like they needed to do it. But for them to pursue consistency and leaving Whitehair in one spot, that should enhance his growth because he is extremely capable. And like I said, I think he played fairly well last year overall, aside from what ends up being the obvious thing when there's a couple of bad snaps. And then we kind of look for everything. Oh, well, if he's near, like one of the sack that was given up in the initial series of the preseason game the other night, was really Cush who got beat, but then Whitehair is near the guy at the end when he's getting to Trubisky, so people are thinking it's Cody Whitehair when it was really Eric Cush who ended up getting beat on it. So, I mean, overall, Cody Whitehair is going to be fine as long as they do end up finding some consistency and not moving him around so much there on the interior. I think that part should end up taking care of itself. With Jordan Howard, one thing I'd like to address with him, since I mentioned his name a moment ago, is that there's almost an assumption, because we do hear a level of confidence from the Bears and from Jordan Howard himself about his hands. He's been playing football for a long time. And what we saw last year with his struggles in the passing game on some very simple routes and some very easy balls that were dropped, and sometimes in extremely key moments. Like, what was it? The season opener where he could have caught the game-winning touchdown.
Sure.
And maybe we have a completely different envision of what Mike Glennon is at that point if Jordan Howard catches that ball.
Let's not get too crazy here. But, the Tampa debacle still happened, and him kicking the ball in front of himself in Green Bay still happened.
But Mike Glennon's in a different world at that point, though. He's a 1-0 quarterback going into week two. Maybe he's just out there slinging it the next week.
Yeah, he's throwing pick sixes and can't even. I tend to think that Jordan Howard catches that ball somehow, some way. We're still seeing Mitchell Trubisky by week five or week six last season.
It's quite possible, but for
Mike Glennon did play well enough, and I put that in air quotes, beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in week three, I think it was, of last season. Somehow, some way.
Also true. But for Jordan Howard, the type of role he'll have in this offense, there's definitely a role for him. There's no doubt about that. He's too talented a ball carrier for there not to be a role. And we know that Matt Nagy wants to run the football. They're going to be able to run it. They're going to be effective with that. I think it's assuming a lot to think that Jordan Howard will be able to really be an effective part of the passing game, because some things just, you know, we keep talking about the things you can coach, things you can't coach. The peanut punch, you can coach that a little bit. You know, the ability to time up a blitz, there's coaching points you can give on that. There are coaching points you can give on catching the football. But that is the thing that most lends itself to just being a natural, instinctive thing that folks have the ability to do. Now, whether it's LASIK being involved, or, you know, focusing on the point of the football and catching it with your eyes, not your hands, like I talk to youth football players about when I'm coaching kids on the field, whatever the case may be, there's kind of finer points you can do to help guys improve their hands a little bit. But I will be thoroughly surprised if Jordan Howard suddenly looks like a competent receiver and route runner this year. Now, he doesn't necessarily need to be a high-level route runner. They don't need to split him out into the slot very much or get him outside the numbers at X like you see some running backs in modern football being able to do, quite a few actually. So even the route running part, that we need to make sure we're actually marginalizing what the scope of that is going to be. But even just to be able to be counted on to catch simple flare routes and swing passes and things that most running backs are asked to do and can do competently, I don't know that we can expect a lot of growth there, because that's just not what he's been up to this point in his football development, and he's played the game for a long time. So I don't think that can be counted on. That could end up leading to issues if every time Jordan Howard's in this spot, you know what the play is going to be, and every time Tariq Cohen's over here, you know what the play is going to be, because both those guys do not have more diverse skill sets than what truly fit the system.
Well, in an offense that's going to actually have weapons this year, as opposed to what we've seen, let's face it, the 2 years Jordan Howard's been here, it's kind of been him. There's not a whole heck of a lot to go around besides him. How important is it for him to be one of those kind of old school backs, in the sense that he's not going to get 35 carries a game, not asking him to be Eddie George, not asking him to be some of those 90s, early 2000s running backs, Jamal Lewis, go out there and run the thing 350 times at the end of the year. But part of his game, to me, seems like it's repeat, handoff, repeat, get him going, because it's, you get so many 1 yard, 2 yards, no yards, 1 yard, no yards, 2 yards, 18 yards, 13 yards. And it's like he is like a freight train. Like, it takes a while to get going. It's not usually, it's rare cases where he hits the ground running to start off a game. Like, is that the way this offense is set up? Is that built to help him earlier in games? Is it still going to be the same kind of thing of physical back needs to wear down the interior side of a defense type of deal? Or how does that kind of blend in with an offense that actually has playmakers seemingly on the outside, seemingly at the tight end position, seemingly a couple of slot receivers as well?
The offense itself, yes, because the way it's structured and the way the blocking schemes will operate, it should open up some more running lanes, and there will be some zone concepts to the way they operate with the run game. So it's not certainly not going to be like that college spread sort of feel, but there will be some of that vibe to it, where you will in unison see offensive linemen at times moving laterally, and the running back, whether it's Howard, whether it's Cohen, being able to cut just based off of the whole declaring itself as the offensive line moves in unison. So there will be some of those elements to the scheme that should give the potential for some earlier success in the games. But the style of Jordan Howard lends itself to looking for contact and running through contact. And so even if there is a running lane that declares itself, just his running style is where he's going to impose his will on tacklers and run through guys who are in or near a hole. And that's part of why you tend to see him picking up steam throughout games, because flat out guys just get tired of tackling his big butt. And he's so powerful and he leans on people over and over again. And so defenders just start to slow down that much more with how aggressive they are trying to meet him in the hole. And when that offensive line that did block the run really, really well last season, in the last couple of years, really, they start to lean on defenders in a way where defenders aren't getting off of blocks as fast. And so there are things schematically that could and probably should lead to earlier success in game from Jordan Howard, but his running style doesn't necessarily, at least what it's been up to this point. There are adjustments that he can make in how he's looking at the holes and how he's approaching the holes after he receives the ball. But overall, his running style is such that he will likely continue to just get stronger throughout the game, because he is such a physical and a burly and an aggressive running style back.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szepkowski, 312-644-6767. Before we're out of here tonight at 10 o'clock, we have some news on the big man himself. Big Ant Herron has some news of him that we have to pass along. We'll get to that. There was a huge moment last night on the north side of Chicago at Wrigley Field, one of the magical moments in what's shaping up to be seemingly another division-winning year, and who knows how far the Cubs can go with that. We'll get into some of that in 8 o'clock hour. 312-644-6767. Nick Szepkowski, Anthony Herron with you, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.